Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys. Let's open up that rave line. Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC is going to do the same thing again, year after year. Oh, no.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Reign of Troy Radio, episode 380, coming to you on Wednesday, September 2nd. It is game week. It is finally here. USC and Alabama locking horns in Jerry World on Saturday nights. We cannot wait. We are going to preview the game, get you all ready for the Crimson Tide and the Cardinal in Gold meeting again. Two wonderful blue blood programs. Yeah, I can't keep it up anymore.
I was wondering how long you were going to be able to pull that one off.
No.
Nope. Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the week that would be, and answer your listener questions. We got a bunch of mailbag questions and so much more. As always, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, Google Play, and Spreaker. Our bonus episodes are on Patreon, patreon.com/randoftroy. Our email address is randoftroy@fansite.com. And our phone number is 213-373-1USC,
Second Whispering Show.
I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined along with my co-host, here in the Reign of Troy studio in Los Angeles, Alicia Daratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Alicia. It is, yeah, that week that really has no importance or anything. Like, I just, you know, certainly does not. Like, there's just, you know, nothing.
Just another week in September, right?
I mean, yeah, like, it's early September, but, like, it doesn't mean anything, you know? It's just,
I mean, it's a very
pay your rent, folks. That's really all we got, right?
Yeah, right.
The only thing that's important right now.
There's no, you know, sitting here a few days before a certain Saturday thinking about a certain game and
don't know what you're talking about.
Convincing ourselves that maybe USC has a chance in said certain game.
Just sitting here on the podcast and saying that. You know, as dominant as Alabama has been in week one, the fact is that this SC team probably is going to be their biggest challenge in the last 12 years. No, like, we were never going to say that on the podcast.
No, I mean, we were.
I wasn't going to sit here and say that Keaton Slovis was going to be the best quarterback Alabama has played in week one since Nick Saban got to Tuscaloosa. Like, I was never going to say that.
No, of course
certainly
not.
Certainly not.
No. And you have no reason to say that now.
No,
so.
I certainly don't. It's, because the game's not happening, folks. It was going to happen on Saturday, USC and Alabama, of course. And it's weird because, you know, we sat here, or I sat here, at the start of the week, and I'm like, yeah, it's supposed to be game week, but it never felt like game week. It never felt like there was this omission in our lives. And that's just because we've just been, you know, so pessimistic about college football. mostly because in the last couple of weeks we've known that there will be no college football for USC in the fall. And so I think that it's been easy to just resign ourselves to the fact that it's not happening. And then you get to this point, and it almost just feels surreal that this was even supposed to be game week. And then I did that thing. I did that thing that I always do every August, where I went on YouTube and started a YouTube binge of college football theme music. Like the CBS theme and the ABC theme and the old college game day themes when I was a kid. I'm watching a 1997 college game day episode, and it starts with you know, Chris Fowler as a lead-in, and he's got the fans behind him, and then it goes into the theme music, and I'm suddenly just transformed and put back into being a 8-year-old sitting on my couch in my PJs eating a donut that my dad just got from the donut shop, knowing, hell yeah, it's game day. I'm going to watch game day, and then I'm going to go get dressed, and we're going to go to the game. Transported back to that moment. And then you're transported back to reality when the video stops. And like, yeah, that's not going to happen this year.
No, certainly not for USC. I mean, there will be other football that's being played, I guess, but it's not USC football. And quite frankly, I've had a hard time getting into any sports this sort of summer. It just hasn't felt real. Like, you know, everyone knows I'm a big soccer fan. EPL has been playing.
Well, I mean,
Champions League's been played. And
you're right, because your Liverpool English Premier League title is not real. It's one with an asterisk.
Well, Liverpool pretty much wrapped up that title before the shutdown. So, you know, go stick your head in the sand a little bit more. But My point is that when the season started back up, I had a really hard time watching it because it didn't feel real. It just felt there's like this weird disconnect I have right now with sports. And that applies to the NBA playoffs. It applies to MLB, to NHL. The only sport that I've really been able to enjoy is F1. And that's, I think, personally, because I never experienced F1 before coronavirus. So like it's
you don't have a reference point of what normal is.
Yeah, exactly. There is no normal there. So I'm curious, as we move forward towards other conferences trying to play, if something will click for me, if it'll feel more real, if I'll be more willing to tune in, if I'll be more willing to sort of like have a, and I don't think this is the right phrase, but it's the closest thing I can think of, like that suspension of disbelief,
right?
That I'll need in order to enjoy sports again this fall. Maybe some bigger football games will do it, but I can certainly say that like Austin Peay and whatever
Central Arkansas?
Whatever team they were playing,
not doing it for you.
Certainly didn't do it for me. The best thing about that game was the uniform. It was like Austin Peay's logo, which is
their helmets are badass.
Badass, yeah. Love them. But the football wasn't good.
Monopoly looking dude.
Yeah, it's awesome. And like the football wasn't good unless you really, really enjoy punting by a quarterback. I mean,
yeah. And shout out if you're an Iowa. We can't joke about Iowa.
Can't
football.
Make Iowa football jokes this year.
No.
Purdue
fan.
Why can you make a Purdue joke?
I see. Hasn't given up 49 points to Purdue.
Well, that's true.
And they're known for punting too.
That's true.
I don't know.
Whatever.
Anyways, the point is, there's no football for USC this fall, but it doesn't mean that there's not going to be bonus episodes over on Patreon this fall. We just launched a first episode, a la carte episode of all of Only Connect, Only Skinect, our version of Only Connect, the BBC game show that we are absolutely smitten with. It is the Only Connect is the nerdiest USC game show you will ever stumble across. Very difficult, a difficult puzzle that we've put together where we've challenged each other to come up with USC trivia answers. You can go listen to it on Patreon. It is a challenge and a half, but we like that kind of challenge, and we're interested to see what you guys have to think. Patreon.com/randoftroy. We can get all of our bonus episodes. We want to do an Only Skinect about once a month. We also have a Take with Jake with our friend Jake Merrifield of the What's Bruin Show up on tap next week. We got that scheduled to record. So bonus episodes are coming this fall, despite no football.
Yeah, and we're going to do our best to keep the content coming. And we hope that you, our listeners, are still willing to support the show. The best way to support the show is through the Patreon. Also, by continuing to listen, we know that it's not as engaging as it would be when we would be throwing out three episodes a week as normal. During this time of the year, we're going to sort of stick to one a week on the main side and try to supplement with our Patreon stuff. But, you know, even if things are slowing down, we still do need your support. So we're incredibly grateful to everyone who has stuck with the Patreon and everyone who continues to listen to the show, too, because we would like the show to continue to stay strong as we get through this fall. And then hopefully we can all pick back up better than ever when football returns.
Yeah, in 2026. When there's the vaccine.
Yeah. The after the world's longest off season in the history of off seasons.
Something we jumped the gun on last year, by the way. We had a tweet last year that we said on the day of the USC Fresno State game, congratulations, USC fans, you survived the longest off season of your lives. And this is because SC was not eligible for a bowl game the year before, and so bowl season was about 6 weeks longer. I mean, the offseason was 6 weeks longer than it normally is, especially since SC's season ended, you know, 2 weeks earlier than normal anyways in 2018. And then there's this offseason, which currently still not as long as last year's offseason, but going to pass that and pass it by some distance.
Yeah, and we had somebody quote tweet that very tweet that we put out from last year at USC Travis, who says, little did we know the longest and darkest of offseason was yet to come. Yes, absolutely. This has been the longest and darkest offseason, and it's only going to stretch longer. If we're lucky, it'll only stretch on for a couple more months. If we're unlucky, we've got a whole other 12 months.
Don't even speak it
to wait.
Existence.
Just saying.
But if you're a Big Ten fan, maybe there's some light at the end of the tunnel. Let's get to the news, shall we? Much to the chagrin of the "please keep politics out of sports" crowd, we gotta talk about politics on this podcast. Something that we've never wanted to discuss. We've always thought that politics, you know, should not be something that we discuss here on the podcast, and we have not talked about politics on the podcast before. And here we are, having to talk about President Donald Trump and a tweet that he put out and his now action to trying to get the Big Ten involved with playing football this fall. The president tweeted on Tuesday, quote, "Had a very productive conversation with Kevin Warren, commissioner of the Big Ten Conference, about immediately starting up Big Ten football. It would be good, great, in parentheses, for everyone, players, fans, country, on the 1 yard line." The president tweets. There was a response from Pete Thamel of Yahoo a couple hours later, who tweeted out a story of his on Yahoo and says, Big Ten sources didn't just deny President Trump's claim that the league returning, quote, immediately was at the, quote, 1 yard line. They laughed about it, a column on the reality of the Big Ten's restart, which is now officially and indelibly. I can never say that word.
Indelibly. You're adding an extra B. Indelibly.
Indelibly politicized. Yeah, we've gotten to that point, unfortunately. Here's another tweet from Dan Wolkin of the USA Today, asking a key question that I think that you guys will definitely be wondering. I asked the Pac-12 source, what gives with the president trying to get the Big Ten to start up, but not the Pac-12? The response, quote, if only we had a school in Nevada instead of just the championships, I'm certain he would have called. Alicia, there's two ways to look at that. One, Nevada is where gambling happens. Vegas is in Nevada. But the other way, and probably the way that this was suggested, Nevada is a swing state in the upcoming election. The Big Ten has a wealth of swing states that decided the last election. Talking about Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio forever is a swing state, right? Pennsylvania. Again, we don't want to talk about politics on this podcast because it has no place with college football, but yet here we are. The Pac-12 does not have those swing states. There's Arizona you can call a swing state. That's basically it. And here it is that you know, President Trump is offering government assistance to get rapid testing for the Big Ten. And it seems like this is a political play to gain favor in those states while ignoring the West Coast. If that's the case, that's you hate to see it. If not, then you know, then the Pac-12 surely is the most formidable conference of all time.
Yeah. My opinion on this is that it has become very politically driven, and what's been very frustrating for me, because you and I have made a conscious effort to avoid politics on this show, because I don't believe in mixing the two. I don't think that my political views matter when it comes to the sports world that we talk about most of the time. And I hate it when politics gets injected in everything especially where it doesn't need to get injected. And what's been very frustrating over the last few months is that politics have been injected in this show and in sports conversations to the point where, like, we've spent a lot of time talking about the coronavirus, the response to the coronavirus, how to handle it specific to college football. And we've been accused of being political about it. You know, I've had people on Twitter come up and call me a liberal journalist or a leftist journalist. And my family and friends had quite a chuckle about that one. Because I make a point of not revealing my politics on Twitter and on this show. And quite frankly, if you think you know where my politics lie, you have no idea. Because that's my own personal business. That's my own private business, at least the way that I see it. But personal sort of politics and politics at large have been muddled up in this whole thing where all of a sudden, if you are in favor of stricter controls in order to get the coronavirus under control, suddenly that puts you on a certain side of the political spectrum, as opposed to just having that opinion because that's your earnest opinion, which is where I stand on these things. So we're at a point now where it's viewed as political that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 shut down in the first place.
Because even if it's apolitical.
Even if it, to me, it's a completely apolitical decision, and right. Yet it's being bandied about as though it was a political decision. And we're getting sort of the opposite reaction on the other side, where now, because the Big Ten and the Pac-12 shut down, now it's the onus of the other side of the political spectrum to counteract that and sort of we're seeing people in SEC country now trying to own the Big Ten and own the Pac-12 by dunking on them over the fact that they're not playing football, as though it's, you know, a typical left-right argument, which I don't think it should be. And the fact that it has become that is really distressing to me, because I think it says a lot about the state of like the discord in this country that's sort of where we're at. But it's just one of those things where we shouldn't be in a situation where the issue is now so politicized that we're talking about battleground states and college football. Like, it's wild to me that we've even gotten to that point. In a completely apolitical way, I'm looking at it saying, if President Trump is offering the Big Ten rapid testing that is coming from the government supply, I'm looking at that not from a left or a right perspective. I'm looking at that from the perspective of someone who just wants to see the coronavirus get under control so that we can go back to normal lives as soon as possible. And to me, college football is not an essential element of life that needs to have those resources directed towards it. If the government has rapid testing, if the government has stores of tests that they're willing to give out, college football is the last place those tests should be going. Those tests should be going to healthcare facilities, to schools.
College football could afford those things.
Yeah.
In a lot of areas, right? Well,
but it's not even about affording it, because some of it has to do with supply and demand. One of the things that the Pac-12 said when they came out with their decision to shut down was that they couldn't meet the standards that they needed to because supplies were so low on so many of the things that they need. I mean, I was reading up on like pipettes, those little pipettes. There's a shortage on those things, like standard medical equipment. There's shortages on those. And if the Pac-12 was going to go ahead and play and do the kind of testing that they were going to need to do in order to facilitate that, they were going to have to get their hands on a lot of that kind of a lot of those kinds of supplies. Well, quite frankly, I don't think those supplies should be something that college football is taking up a share of the demand, if that means that it makes it that much harder for a hospital to get it, or a school to get it, or actual essential services to get it. And college football is incredibly important to you and I, absolutely, but it's not an essential service. It is not something, like, I would put college football well below restaurants at this point. So, like, take those tests that you're going to use on football players and give them to restaurants so they can test their waiters and waitresses. Take those tests and give them to Target and Walmart so that they can test their employees or people at the grocery store who are actually being put at risk while getting paid minimum wage. Like, the whole thing is just topsy-turvy in that sense. So I'm very frustrated because my primary concern here is on a societal level. And what we've gotten into is now this argument over, you know, what risks are worth taking so that amateur athletes can go out and play a game. Like, it's just not that, it shouldn't be that important. And yet it has become this thing that people are willing to risk so much, not just the health of the student athletes who are, again, amateurs who aren't getting paid, not just the health of their families and friends who are going to be exposed to them, who are getting exposed to all sorts of other people, not just the risk to the health of the coaches and the society at large if you have outbreaks that are sparked by college football teams that are gathering en masse, but that we're taking resources away from other aspects of society that need them. It's too much for me. Like, I don't get it. And I say this entirely, I'm not saying this from a political perspective at all. I'm saying this from a big picture. How do we get this thing under control as quickly as possible? And what areas are we actually focused on getting back to normal? Sports should be the last thing that comes back to normal. Leisure should be the last thing that comes back to normal. And yet this is the thing that we're putting all our time and effort into in September as a global pandemic continues.
Yeah, there's, you know, big swaths of our economy that certainly need assistance along with college football. But it's a difficult situation to be in. Absolutely. We did get a tweet from Pleakley. If college football has a season that goes by and no one gets corona, will the Pac-12 regret canceling their season? Okay, I want to get into this because I've seen this question, you know, bantied about, did the Pac-12 pull the plug too early? The Pac-12 and the Big Ten pulled the plug too early. Clearly, if you're President Trump, you think so. How can we say that they did? Iowa had 93 positive tests throughout their athletic department that shut down sports. 93. Alabama has had a bunch of tests. A bunch of other schools have had tests. SC right now is currently not working out through September 8th because they had 8 athletes in football and men's water polo test positive for COVID-19. Not to mention that, again, SC and UCLA cannot practice. Even if, you know, the football season was allowed to happen from the Pac-12's perspective, and the Pac-12 was gung-ho about playing, USC and UCLA could not practice because of local ordinances. They couldn't play. So how can you sit here and say that the Pac-12 has egg on its face right now? If the those other conferences are able to get their crap together and put together a successful season and everyone stays healthy and all that kind of stuff, yeah, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 can look at it and say, we made a poor decision in hindsight, knowing that maybe it was possible that this could have been pulled off. But how can we even assume that that's, you know, a prevailing case right now? Because we all want college football to happen, but that doesn't mean that we need to just ignore the objectivity here that, my God, there are some problems if 93 Iowa Hawkeyes are testing positive for COVID-19, and we're going to sit here and say the Big Ten should be playing football?
Well, I mean, and that's sort of been my response to everybody talking about the Pac-12 recently, is USC and UCLA can't practice, like you said. USC wasn't able to work out over the past week and won't be able to work out for another week. So how were they supposed to be ready for a football season that was scheduled to start on September 5th? How are they supposed to be ready for a football season that was scheduled to start on September 26th? They weren't going to be ready for that game. And at this point, at this rate, they weren't going to be ready for a week later start like they originally planned. So
right.
I think that will the Pac-12 regret canceling the season? I don't think they will regret canceling the season. I think they will bemoan the difficulties that they had.
Sure.
Getting in the way of their ability to play a season. I think if the Pac-12 doesn't play in the spring or the winter, that they will regret not making that happen. But the reality is that the Pac-12 wasn't going to be able to pull off a football season this fall. And we still haven't seen if the SEC, Big 12, and ACC are going to actually be able to pull off their football season.
And I don't know how we can assume that they will, knowing that there's all these outbreaks.
Yeah, I think
it just seems really presumptive based on wanting it to happen, which you know, is not to go on a soapbox here. This has been my biggest problem with media this offseason, is there's a segment that loves to talk about all this bullshit about how people are rooting for the virus not to take down college football, rooting for this and rooting for that, which is ridiculous because we've talked about it multiple times. College football not happening is bad for business for us.
Absolutely.
Absolutely is bad for business for, like,
we're asking folks to hang on with this podcast with the hopes that there will be football in January or February. Right. If there's no football in January or February and we have to wait a full 12 months before we get football back,
how are we going to still have jobs?
I don't know.
Right. So the idea that we are rooting for college football to not happen because of coronavirus is insane. And you get media members with big followings tweeting that the media is purposely sheltering reporting numbers to further a narrative. Well, they're out there purposely looking the other way when, again, 93 Iowa Hawkeyes tested positive for COVID-19.
Athletes, not students. Yeah. Athletes.
Athletes, Hawkeyes. And we're going to sit here and say that the Big Ten is an embarrassing, pathetic conference for not playing football? Like, get the hell out of here with that. You know, like, just because we want something to happen doesn't mean we have to lose all objectivity. And that is what's happening. And it drives me utterly insane. So, yeah, the Pac-12 could regret things if everything goes against them. But there's no evidence to say right now that that's going to be the case. It certainly might be the case.
See, I wonder.
But we can't sit here definitively and say that the Pac-12 and the Big Ten have egg on their face. Because they don't. Because we haven't seen how it's going to play out yet.
Yeah, well, we certainly, we are jumping the gun if we're saying that they have egg on their face when the SEC hasn't played a game, when the ACC hasn't played a game, when the Big 12 hasn't played a game.
Right.
I think there is a chance that we get through a season and they don't have to shut down. And if that's the case, like I said, I don't think if you're the Pac-12 that you sit here and say you made the wrong decision. I think if you're the Pac-12, you sit here and say, we made a different decision, right, and it was right for us.
I got a tweet from King Camby, and I thought it was so on point because it kind of sums up where we're at as a country right now, not just about COVID, but about literally everything. And that for years, you know, King Camby says, for years, both sides are going to claim that they made the right decision and defend this vehemently, right? The Pac-12 is forever going to say that they made the right decision, and the ACC and the SEC is forever going to say that they made the right decision and argue it mercilessly forever, because we are in a situation where a common reality does not exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And not just in politics, but just in life in general. There is no more common reality that we can all agree upon. We grew up knowing that people can have differences of opinions. And yet we've gotten to this place now to where there is no difference of opinions. It's my reality exists and yours doesn't. And I'm not going to listen to yours. And your reality is just hypothetical because I don't care about it. That's the situation we've gotten to. And so if you're an SEC fan, you're going to sit there and, you know, drink the Kool-Aid and forever say that your side was right on it. And if you're a Pac-12 fan, you're going to do the same the other way, when the reality is there's nuance involved here, and they can both make the right decisions and then be different, and they can both make the wrong decisions. And more importantly, as it stands right now, we don't know whose decision was right or wrong anyways, because we don't know what the outcome of the season is going to be.
Yeah. Well, you know your thing about grading coaching hires?
Yes.
That's where we're at right now.
For sure. Yeah.
We're grading these decisions as though they're coaching hires that just got made, when really we should wait a season or two and see what the coaches actually do and then assess a grade, right? So that's what we need to
look. Knowing what the Pac-12 knew, I don't begrudge them for their decision. And same thing with the Big Ten.
The only thing I begrudge the Pac-12 on is the same thing I begrudge all college football on, which is stop hiding behind amateurism.
Right.
Acknowledge that your players are not amateurs. And maybe that could have put us on a path to creating a bubble.
Right.
Which still wouldn't have been ideal, because as I said before, sports taking up valuable resources still makes me a little bit squicky.
Yep.
But at least then I wouldn't be sitting here going that these unpaid players who aren't allowed to collectively bargain, who aren't allowed to come to the table and negotiate terms for them coming to play and risk their health and the health of everyone around them,
right,
that at least I would feel like there was a fairness and a justice to that. But
right,
as it stands, we don't have that. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a perfectly solid place to be in right now. But anyways, let's turn the page, talk about Jay Tufele. We didn't have a podcast last week, and Jay Tufele announced that he's going to forego the rest of his eligibility and get ready for the NFL, especially, you know, opting out in the weird circumstances of this whole COVID year and whatnot. It's so difficult because he's someone who we've seen the NFL draft projections, and he's been on the brink of being a first rounder. Someone who could get picked at the end of the first round, but sometimes you see things that he's in the third round or whatever. So he's someone who really needed this season to happen to solidify himself as a first rounder, because he's been inconsistent. And it's a super bummer that he isn't going to get that opportunity this fall to be able to prove that. And now he's going to have to try to prove it through different means, right? And more power to him. Good luck in the future, Jay. And I think everyone will be rooting for him to see what he can do at the next level. But, you know, it leads us to a tweet that we got from BlackCyan455. With Tufele opting out, who do you see stepping up at the interior lineman position?
I think the biggest sadness I have about Tufele leaving is that we don't get to see what Vic Saoto gets to do with him.
Yeah.
But what we will get to see is what Vic Saoto does with Brandon Peely, which is potentially just as exciting. And I think that would be the thing that I'm looking forward to the most, assuming that we get a spring season, is what does that lineup look like? And I think you would end up seeing a lineup where Marlon Tupelotu is still your nose tackle, and you're using Brandon Peely potentially in the Jay Tufele role. It's not exactly like for like, because Peely is so much bigger than Tufele, but right, Peely has that athletic burst. Yeah. That I think,
and he has experience.
And you could be in a situation where you have Tupelo to Peely and Drake Jackson as your interior three. You could be in a situation where you have Tupelo to Peely and, you know, a Caleb
Lichtenstein.
Jake Lichtenstein, Caleb Tremblay, someone like that filling the third.
Dejon Benton.
Yeah, the third defensive lineman role while Drake Jackson works in more of an outside position. I had sort of convinced myself at this point that Drake Jackson would end up being a defensive end in a three-man front. And so I am kind of low-key excited for the possibility of seeing Drake Jackson, Marlon Tupelotu, and Brandon Peely line up together, because I think that's
you don't think Drake will be outside as an outside edge guy?
I don't think so. I think Drake has enough of a frame to be to basically turn him into another Rasheem Green type.
Okay. I feel like he's too much of a playmaker to be a run stopper. That makes sense.
Right. I agree with that. But at the same time, I think he's too much of a playmaker to, acknowledging that the scheme that USC was going to throw out there, that outside linebacker spot was potentially not always going to be on the field.
Right.
I'd almost rather have someone like Hunter Eccles be the situational player in there than be in a situation where Drake Jackson is sort of
Eccles
floating.
Is like a dedicated pass rusher.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, like, I think the best thing for Drake Jackson would be to stick him in a spot where that's his role, 100%. And I think if you use him on the outside, if you use him as more of the sort of edge outside linebacker, you're going to be asking him to split his duties quite a bit.
Yeah.
And with doing other things besides being responsible for attacking the quarterback or attacking the backfield. So I think just simplify things, especially because he does have a frame that could be useful in there. But this is something obviously Vixa Oto knows way better than I do. So I was going to be very excited to see how they ultimately decided to make that front work for them, for the personnel that they have. So that's something that I'm very intrigued by. The biggest problem with losing Tufele is that you don't have as much flexibility on the depth side of things with Drake Jackson, with Brandon Peely, with Marlon Tupelotu. You're kind of now stuck in, if you find those three guys as your first team guys, they better be healthy the whole way through. Otherwise, you're playing with some major unknowns.
Yeah, because I think all of this is really, a set of major unknowns. We got a question from Tana who says, DL depth chart in the spring, ? I don't know how we can even guess at this point. Like, you mentioned Brandon Peely. I think Brandon Peely is just an easy answer for saying who can fit there instead of Tufele. But in terms of depth chart, we haven't even seen this defense on the field to know. We missed out in the spring. We missed out in the fall. It's going to be an entire year of not being at a USC practice to see what they are going to be like and how they are going to fit this Tyler Lander defense. So I don't know that we can say what the depth chart is, because I think it's easy to sit here and say that, it would be Drake Jackson, Brandon Peely, and Marlon Tupelotu. But then after that, you just have a bunch of names. And there are a bunch of guys who could be in there, but in what pecking order, I have no idea. Your Lichtensteins, your Bentons, your Trevor Trouts, the new guys on the defensive line in the 2020 class. Like, there's so many different possibilities that we didn't get to see anything, to the point that I don't even know how you even guess.
Well, it's funny you mentioned, because I did take a stab at guessing this on FanDetroit.com after JT Ville announced, and it was difficult. It was very difficult, and I had to, I challenged myself to create a depth chart with as few oars as possible. And I still ended up with like three oars. So
three oars. You just need 2 weeks. And get a city.
There you go. Yeah, some good old Settlers of Catan jokes. So here's where I went, and take this for what it is. I have to guess what Vixa Oto, what Todd Orlando have in mind for this defensive front, and where each of these players is going to line up in this coming season. And so many of them are versatile kind of players. It's very difficult to nail this down. But based on previous depth charts, based on my own observations, here's what I've come up with. This is what I would sort of propose. And if I was drastically wrong, I would shrug and say, yep, I tried my best, but I knew this could be drastically wrong. And if I was right, I would say, oh, see, sometimes I do get things right. So I was thinking at defensive tackle, I've set up defensive tackle, nose tackle, and defensive end just for clarity, but it's a front three. A lot of times, like Todd Orlando uses defensive end, nose tackle, defensive end. That's just confusing. So let's go defensive tackle. I've got Brandon Peely, Jacob Lichtenstein, Stanley I still can't say his name. I'm sorry, Stanley. Kobe Pepe and Tuli Tuipulotu. Those are who I think the pecking order at defensive tackle might be. And I put those guys in there in part because those are the bigger bodies that that are still dynamic enough to potentially rush the passer and not just be space eaters. Jacob Lichtenstein, Clancy Pendergast at least liked his length. So I have him there at defensive tackle, being uncertain. I've seen his Instagram. He looks like he's jacked right now. So, you know, size-wise, I think he could potentially fit up in there, but he might also fit more as a defensive end type. At nose tackle, I've got Marlon Tuipulotu, Dejon Benton, or Trevor Trout, and Jamar Sakona, the true freshman, coming in behind them. So the problem with Benton and Trevor Trout behind Tuipulotu is I know what USC has in Tuipulotu. He's maybe not as big as you'd want for a nose tackle in a three-man front. He's not the massive space eater that you'd want, but he's technically sound, and I think USC will continue to use him in that spot. Dejon Benton has flashed more than Trevor Trout. Trevor Trout has been injured so much, I have no idea what Trevor Trout's got in him. So that's a big or. And then Jamar Sakona is just a freshman who shouldn't be called on to play yet. At defensive end, I went with Drake Jackson. And here we go. Caleb Tremblay or Connor Murphy or Nick Figueroa. Drake Jackson, fairly confident he's going to start somewhere. Tremblay, Murphy, and Figueroa, flip a coin, throw a dart, close your eyes, and pin the tail on the donkey. And that's how you'll figure out where those guys fit in and who's going to actually see playing time.
Is that optimistic or pessimistic, Alicia?
It's very much, I have no idea. I mean, optimistic Alicia likes all three of those guys and their skill set and their potential to contribute. Pessimistic Alicia looks at it and goes, you know, USC hasn't gotten more than just a few rotation snaps out of any of them over the last few years. So who the heck knows?
Yeah, it's definitely quite the crapshoot. We got more listener questions. Let's get into it and just call this thing a mailbag, shall we?
You've got mail.
All right, we got a question from Seven Costanza. Great name. Love that name in honor of the great Mickey Mantle. Seven says, when were you guys going to go to Texas this week? Spoiler alert. We're still going to Texas. We're too lazy to cancel our flights.
Those cheap Southwest flights, man.
Yeah, so we'll be donning masks and gloves and trying to be as COVID
hand protected. Sanitizer.
Yeah, COVID protected as possible. You know, I've got family and friends in Texas, so it made sense to still go down there. And if nothing else, then to go to Jerry World on Saturday and just to tweet a picture and be like, we're here. Where's everybody else at?
Spoiling the joke there, Michael.
There's like eight people who still listen to this podcast.
Yeah,
this offseason.
Yeah, the loyal eight. We appreciate y'all. But yeah, we're gonna go to Texas and do our best to be safe about it. But it's certainly not going to be the trip that we wanted it to be.
It's not going to be the same.
It'll be a lot more low key, though. And sure. Yeah. I'm not going to be mad about that, though, because just sitting around a house with friends playing board games and cuddling
that
with babies
is the most quarantining thing possible.
It'll be great quarantining. Yes.
Yeah, for sure. We got a tweet from Richard. Am I too late to get my question in? It's been 17 minutes. That's my question. Yes, it is too late. We're not going to answer it. Let's go to a tweet from Soulless Trojan. Have players been talking about transferring so they can go somewhere else and play? we haven't heard anything publicly, of course. And this is the, you know, I've seen a lot of people say that there's going to be a mass exodus of players transferring. I've seen people say that the Pac-12 and the Big Ten are never going to be able to recruit elite players ever again. That take is laughable to me. But more so on the thing about transferring, I think people are forgetting that it's not just players can transfer right now. It takes the other school to have room. So this idea that, you know, there's going to be a bunch of SC players transferring to the SEC so that way they can go play football immediately this fall is only as good as the numbers at those schools allow it to be. So I'm sure that there's players thinking about it, not just at SC, but at any other school in the Pac-10, Pac-12 or the Big Ten, right? Like, surely you would think about that kind of thing. But it's not like Alabama has 50 scholarships ready to get everybody on board suddenly, immediately, as much as Nick Saban wished that he could do that.
Yeah, and most of those teams will have gone into the summer with more or less full rosters, maybe two or so, you know, maybe on the broader side, a handful of scholarships to work with. So there will be limited opportunities. And I think that's why we haven't seen that many guys enter the portal. And a lot of the guys that have, I think there was a guy from Colorado who entered the portal who ended up going back. The one name I can think of just across the Pac-12 is Colin Schooler from Arizona. He transferred to Texas Tech, but like that's the kind of move that would have to happen. The best player on a team or the best player on a defense finding somewhere that fit.
Right.
But there's only once Colin Schooler has taken up one of those spots at Texas Tech, they don't have that spot then to work with to bring in someone else. So originally, I thought that we were going to see quite a few guys transfer out of the Pac-12 and the Big Ten into the SEC and the ACC and the Big 12. But I think we've almost reached the threshold at which that's no longer viable.
Yeah.
Because now if you're a USC player and you are looking at, okay, I want to play this season, so I'm gonna transfer out, you're kind of out of time. You've got, what, 3 weeks until the SEC starts? Or well, 3 weeks until the ACC starts?
School's starting in general anyways.
Yeah, so if you're going to transfer, you need to
already started.
And now you need to enter the transfer portal now, get that transfer dealt with ASAP, get in, start school, and then immerse yourself in a team setting where you have like 2 weeks to learn the depth chart and start to earn some potential playing time.
Right.
It's just not a great situation for players.
Especially when it's not a guarantee that these schools are still going to play.
Yes.
Given all the outbreaks.
Yeah,
still
you could if you're Colin Schooler, you transfer to Texas Tech and they play 2 weeks before they have to cancel the season. Well, now you've transferred and you are sort of stuck in a situation where you transferred for what, two games that you probably weren't used that much in because you weren't ready to play yet. It's a huge risk actually for any player that tried to do it.
Right.
From a USC perspective, I think it's been interesting to think about who might transfer. And I said this, I don't know if I've said this on this show, but I think I said it when I was on the 42 Social Club with Jedi ASU that USC has a weirdly strong team culture.
Clay Elton talked about that.
Yeah. And it's hard to actually see a mass exodus because dudes have stuck with Clay Elton.
I'm going
to
push back on
that. I know that this isn't surefire. I think this could break very, very quickly. But I kind of believe Clay Elton when he says that there's a vibe around this particular team.
What's Clay Elton supposed to say? Yeah, my players are going to look into transferring?
No, but I think it rings true. I think it rings true that, like, who is going to transfer? If
but
by
they've
this
always
point,
backed up Clay Elton, and they've still had a bunch of players in the portal.
If by this point, Amon-Ra St. Brown hasn't opted out. If by this point,
right,
Elijah Vera Tucker hasn't opted out. If by this point, Talanoa Hufanga, Isaiah Polamau, Elijah Griffin, Isaac Taylor Stewart, all those guys haven't opted out, then I kind of believe the idea that there isn't necessarily incentive to jump ship.
I don't disagree with that point, that that they might not see enough of an incentive to jump ship. I don't necessarily think that it's because of USC's tight-knit, you know.
No, but I think it helps that USC has a comfort level on its team, that USC has made
But doesn't every school have that?
Not every school has that. When we're seeing guys jump ship from Washington State, I know it's a different situation, but, you know, I think
that's
there's
a much different situation.
I know, but I think that there's different vibes from different schools. And and I think that USC has, the current roster at USC has a vibe that has prioritized a certain kind of player who fits the vibe of the team. That's something that we've seen USC focus on, is guys who are very sort of team oriented, for better or for worse.
The way I look at it, I think that you're right, that if those players were going to leave, I think they would have already left already, just like J2 Pele has already left. However, I'm not going to buy that it's because of the tight-knit team thing. We can disagree. That's fine. You know, your reality does not exist.
Dudes continue to ride or die with Clay Helton.
No, I know.
Like, that's all I'm saying. Like,
but
beyond all...
People continue to ride or die with Clay Helton, and there was still mass attrition from that 2016 class, right?
Right, but the people who left were the people who weren't going to play. So what we're talking about, the only players who were going to be able to transfer at this stage were players who were starters at USC and were going to be enticed.
It's a different situation, yeah.
Yes.
You're transferring now because you can play.
Yes.
Whereas you're not going to transfer now if it's uncertain, because you might as well just keep the status quo.
Yeah.
Let's go to a tweet from Kelly. Will any conference make it all the way through the football season? I see schools not being able to field teams by midseason. We talked about this earlier. I don't know. I wouldn't hold my breath for anything to be completed. That's not because I'm choosing to want it not to happen. No, I absolutely want to see college football go off without a hitch this year, which seems weird that I always have to preface that. But again, this is the
reality,
the garbage narratives that have been put out there this season by various media outlets. So, yeah, I want to see it happen. I'm not going to hold my breath. I will eat plenty of crow if it happens. I don't foresee this going off without a hitch, especially if baseball couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And I know baseball's still playing, but baseball also...
Baseball can afford to postpone games in a much different kind of way than football will be able to. But having said, like, I'm in such a weird state where, like, I think that inevitably you'll end up with a situation where very important players are going to have to sit out games. But at this point, it is so political. It is so sort of... tied to pride, almost.
People have dug in their heels, for sure.
Yes, people have absolutely dug in their heels. I currently feel that the conferences that are going to play are going to play regardless of any... Like, they are going to push on...
It would be seen as weak to go back on that. Which is absolutely ridiculous that's the situation.
Short of a massive outbreak, which at this point I don't think will be possible, because so many of the programs are doing more regular testing because they are getting on top of quarantining and all that. Like, I don't see the possibility of like a massive outbreak that's so huge that they can't continue to play a game. I think they'll play a game with, you know, 22 players that are available if that's what they have to do.
Also, not to get all super conspiracy theory here, but this is a sport that has seen schools put out kids who were injured and played through injuries they shouldn't have played through, through concussions they shouldn't have played through. I think it's a little presumptive to assume that.
Do we trust that the tests aren't going to get fudged?
I hope that's not the case. I hope that stupid, dumb speculation to say that.
I hope not. I hope not, but I would be lying if I didn't say that it if I said that it didn't cross my mind.
Well, again, because it goes back to the whole pride thing. We've made this about politics and pride and manliness even too, which is just ridiculous. But 2020, right? Mm-hmm. Tweet from Confused Observer: since the Pac-12 can't get its act together, which SEC team should we root for? I don't know. If you got to pick an SEC team to even if it's not an SEC team, but ACC, Big 12. I've always been an Oklahoma guy. I like Oklahoma. I like I like Boomer Sooner.
Yeah, I like Oklahoma. In the SEC, I find this is gonna be weird. I find Georgia to be very intriguing.
The whole Newman Daniels thing is interesting.
Yeah, like I think I could see myself wanting to see Georgia challenge Alabama.
Sure.
So maybe it's not rooting for Georgia, but certainly being interested in Georgia.
Sure. I could see it.
I mean, unless you just want to go straight up and be a masochist and say root for Vandy.
Or Ole Miss because of Lane Kiffin.
There you go.
Last tweet from Sam, who says, will Fernando Tatis Jr. win the NL MVP? Alicia, you have transitioned to not just talking about USC football and Reign of Troy, but now you are a news desk writer over at fanside.com. You can go read your work over there on various nights throughout the week. Alicia, I think you are now the expert on this podcast to discuss this.
That would require me to know which team Fernando Tatis Jr. plays for offhand.
The San Diego Fathers.
The San Diego Padres. He tripled to drive in two as the Padres topped the Rockies yesterday, Monday. So that tells me that he's having a very good season, and he's gonna... Oh. 2 days ago, he led the Padres to a 13-2 rout of the Rockies. So he sounds like he's having a very good season, and I'm sure I will be writing about him in the future.
He hits dongs on 3-0. We know that he doesn't like to take 3-0 pitches when he's up by 7 runs.
Yes. Oh, that's what I know him from. Okay, can we just have a conversation right now?
Yeah.
The whole, like, unwritten rules thing, like, I don't mind...
So stupid.
I don't mind unwritten rules, but, like, when they're stupid, I do mind them. And, like, the idea that you shouldn't be allowed to swing at a pitch when you have the potential to hit a grand slam, like, just because you're up by 7, which we've seen teams come back from bigger deficits than that. So, like... It's just that's just dumb. It's just really dumb to get like offended by that as though you were wronged. Like maybe don't give up the home run. Like
yeah, don't give up the home run. It's absolutely ridiculous.
So like unwritten rules are fine, but like stupid unwritten rules are stupid.
I don't mind unwritten rules. You know, don't be a dick in general. Don't go for two when you know score touchdowns unless it's Madden and you need the development points, right? Like that kind of thing. Sure. But the one that bothers me is the one in soccer where you're not supposed to celebrate, or like this faux pas against celebrating against your old former team.
Yeah, yeah. You see guys like score and they just sort of like hold their hands up like, whoops.
I'm sorry.
Like, get out of here.
Like, it's so dumb. Like Messi is going to leave Barcelona, go somewhere else. Inevitably, he's going to face Barcelona again. And the entire week, all people are going to talk about is, will he celebrate if he scores? What? It's a freaking goal. If he does, absolutely he should fist pump and he should do the knee slide and he should do whatever else he does.
Like, I mean,
he doesn't have to, like, you know, whip out his junk and be a dick about it, but, like, he can celebrate. What's wrong with celebrating?
And that's my whole thing. You should celebrate. Maybe tone down your celebration. Like, if normally you would do, like, a knee slide, rip off your shirt, bang your chest and all that kind of stuff, maybe tone it down a little bit there. But you should absolutely celebrate. Like, there's no question you should celebrate.
It's insulting if you don't.
But it's, like, weird because it's, like, only a soccer thing. You don't see that in any other sport. No. Like, most other sports, you, like, are particularly pumped up about playing your old team, right? Like, when Aaron Rodgers inevitably leaves the Packers and lands with the Bears or something like that, like, Do you think, like, how crazy would it be if Aaron Rodgers throws a touchdown pass and then stands there and goes like, whoop, hands up like, oops, I'm sorry, like, bashful. And all. No, no, like, he's going to sit there and, like pull out his junk, do the discount double check, like, roar. Like, that's what, I don't know, maybe it's, like, American thing, but, like.
Yeah, like Sebastian Vettel goes and wins at Monza next year, like, with Jaguar, I mean, with Aston Martin, and he's supposed to be like, oh, sorry, Ferrari. Like, no.
No, he's going to get out of that and, like, you know, be one up to Ferrari and just, like, you know.
Oh, sorry, we're not supposed to talk about
it. We're not supposed to have one, no.
All right, well, that'll end this thing. Thanks for listening, as always.
I'm actually looking forward to the sounds of the race thing where they get on the microphone with Vettel. And his first words after he crosses the finish line are, suck it, Ferrari.
That would be fantastic. I love the editing this past week race when Kimi passes the Ferrari and someone edited in him laughing.
Yeah.
It was great. Anyways, that's the end of the podcast. Thanks for listening, as always. Join us over on Patreon, patreon.com/randoftroy. Go listen to our new edition of Only Skenect, the nerdiest and most challenging USC trivia game you will ever play. It is fun. We had a good time. We hope you guys have a good time listening to it as well. Patreon.com/randoftroy is where you can do that. Elise, you got a final word?
The final word is celebrate, as in find every reason you can to celebrate, especially if it's scoring a goal against your old team.
There's no football, though.
Celebrate.
Good time. Come on. All right, see ya.
See ya.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.